Yeah, this really is fairly not good for Kevin. Fairly not good, bud. Morning.
Morning.
Roads are a little bit rough out there. Be careful. Be careful. I feel like I'm going to be saying that all winter long. Every morning, the roads aren't that good out there.
Is Northeast Ohio winter having a comeback?
We were talking about this yesterday, and I was like, yeah, you know, it's been about two or three nice winters, pretty easy winters. And this one is just, and next week's going to be worse.
Well, we had a great September. We had a great October. Then in November.
And then we've had
a
long December.
We're just going to power rank the months now.
Yeah, I think best of the year, September. So I am on record that I think now the calendar has shifted a bit. And I think September is now the best month of the year.
November sucked. They're at the bottom. You got to go earlier with Thanksgiving. It's too late if it's going to be the same way or this coming year is going to be the same way. Late Thanksgiving, hate it. Two Novembers in a row, terrible Novembers. The hell out of here.
Did we have an October to remember?
In a way, yeah. Yeah. I remember that. I was driving past the baseball stadium today and remembered that night.
And then I'll go June.
The guy yelling Juan Soto trying to get in a fight.
I'll go June. June, you would, if you came into Cleveland, Ohio in June, where everything is green as can be. You haven't been fried out yet. You haven't had the drought. Everything's as green as can be. The undulations of Northeast Ohio, the hills.
Yeah.
And when everything is with full leaves.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
Oh, it's so beautiful up here.
It's beautiful. I like a nice summer. Who doesn't? Yeah, be careful out there on the roads, all right?
Seems like that'll be 3 years away till we get to weather like that. We are in Arctic Vortex.
This is terrible.
What is it called?
This is terrible. I don't know. Polar Vortex.
Polar, not Arctic. Polar.
Are we still naming snowstorms or is that done? That was pointless. We done doing that? I don't know. It's going to be like 1 degree next week. So if you're upset because some people in the outer ring listening area might have the two-hour delay, the vaunted two-hour delay, and then the some may have the day off. Well, guess what? I think next week's going to be one of them days where you have cold days.
What we technically have is a polar vortex-related Arctic blast.
Okay.
Is that an El Nino?
Spanish for the Nino.
I am El Nino. I'm going to do that on TV one time. I'm going to do it. I don't know if I want to go bare chest, but I'm going to do it. Boy, all schools in Stark County are closed. All right. Anyway, what's the worst
Stefanski,
about this article?
Get a hold of your team.
Get a hold of the weather, Stefanski.
What are you doing? Coach him up.
Jason's going to join us at 640
You're
this morning.
You're a coach. Coach him.
Jason Lloyd joins us at 640 this morning. Well, you know, that's the thing, is when you say the two-time coach of the year and I make a big deal, you know, this is performative. No. It's that when I have to turn it on myself, if we keep saying two-time coach of the year, this, that, and the other, well, yeah, then I'm expecting you as an offensive guy to be able to coach up the offense. Like, there were some people coming at me going, well, does Mike Tomlin coach the quarterback? No, I'm not saying Mike Tomlin. If we were in Pittsburgh, I would be saying something different. Yet not every situation's the same. Some are. Some are supposed to be tenets of what you're trying to do as a football team. And this, what bothers me is this is kind of the tenets of what you're trying to do as a football team. And what bothers me the most about the article that Jason wrote in The Athletic, and Jason will join us at 640 to talk about that article, because I really want to know if the relationship between Kevin Stefanski and his players are beyond repair. Players are telling Jason this sort of thing, and I'm going, we're going into another season here. Now you've affected their trust. Now you've affected their faith in you. So who's leading the organization? Who is it? But I even wrote it down. What bothers me the most is that we were all right. Not just you and me. I think by far the majority of Browns fans out there, there's nothing against Jason. It wasn't like, oh, you told us everything. It's a nothing burger. No, it's a lot. There's a lot there. But it just, it knocked down everything that we believed to be true as true. It solidified everything. We were right. Why did they hire Ken Dorsey? Because they needed to help Deshaun Watson because they were throwing a Hail Mary and they wanted to do as Deshaun Watson bid them. Great, which is something you and I wondered last winter and something that fans wondered last winter. Why the players played for Joe Flacco, which is something we all wondered last fall into the wintertime, which killed me to say it, was, hey, man, he's not coming back. Why isn't he coming back? Because your quarterback's a basket case, which, by the way, Watson is a basket case. Those three things right off the tippy top that I just wrote down yesterday afternoon to bring in today, I go, there it is. Everybody was right. Everybody was right. Bob and Vermillion, all the way up to Jeff and Connie. And I'm making up names and making up cities off the top of my head. People in Strongsville, all the way down to Stark County. Guys who woke up today and saw that school was closed down in Canton City Schools and now are making different arrangements for their children. They were all correct. The three things right off the top of my head that I can think about, maybe you can name some more, the three things that we all thought were true ended up being true. And it bothers you because you thought, we wasted away a year. We wasted away an entire year on this guy who's terrible. But you know what? I said it yesterday. I can't keep just blaming him for everything. You're the guy who's supposed to lead the football team. And you have veterans now who are not openly saying it. These are anonymous sources, but they're players. Even though, boy, you listen to Jack Conklin in the locker room. What was it, last week or the week before? I'm starting to run together now that the season's over. But at the end of the season, you hear what Jack Conklin says. It's like, yeah, I mean, Jack, it seems like he's willing to put his name on it as a veteran about the leadership and about needing things and about getting back to an identity as an offense. There's no identity as an offense. And now you have veterans. Why are you treating this guy differently when we don't trust him?
All right, so you
he can't find
you
the proper depth in the offense. He can't. Yeah, it's sorry. Go ahead.
You started the show wondering if he's lost the locker room.
I question it. It's got to be teetering. I want to ask Jason, is the relationship between Kevin Stefanski and his players beyond repair? Because if he alludes to it being, I might wonder if we're wasting our time again.
I don't think he has, because I hope not. I think there would have been a lot more smoke than just, you know, this piece that came out, you know, 2 weeks after the season ends or a week after the season ends. If players, especially with as many veterans and high-priced veterans as the Browns have, I think you would see more. I think you would see so much more chronicling, you know, all the bad in Stefanski where he lost the locker room. And I never got that vibe. And it's one thing to talk about, like, when the announcers parachute in and they're like, man, we talked to guys this week. They are still fighting. With the exception of Pittsburgh, they basically say that.
They didn't say it on Saturday.
In every locker room, you know, by the end of the year. So okay. I don't put a ton of stock into that.
Great idea.
I'm just saying, Kenny, I think we would know so much more if this thing was hanging by a thread. So I don't think it is.
Well, that's why I want to ask Jason.
I think they're just looking for a normal quarterback situation. Because I think they think if you get a normal quarterback situation, which they have not had, I think they think everything will be I don't know, fine, but way better than it was last year.
And this is why I want to ask Jason that, because there is some shred to it that if they were still playing for Kevin, if they're still trying for Kevin, then the rest of the team's just putting it on the front office, ownership, Deshaun, saying that, well, Kevin had his hands tied. He wasn't allowed to say, and this is pure, utter speculation here. Kevin had his hands tied. He wasn't allowed to criticize critically,
which is ridiculous,
Deshaun Watson.
Which is ridiculous all the way around. Like, the coach needs to be able to do that.
And if the coach felt that he couldn't do it because he wasn't going to get anything out of him, again, then you've traded for a complete and utter basket case, which I think is a basket case. I think there's
a lot of blame that needs to
be
at the doorstep of Kevin Stefanski.
There's dirt on everyone's hands.
I also don't think it means that they've given up on him. He's lost the locker room.
I hope not.
I hope not. So many of those veterans are like, it's a Deshaun thing.
But Anthony,
just give us a normal quarterback situation, well, and that's not happening with Kevin Stefanski. They've seen Stefanski be able to hit it off in big ways and have it pay off.
And I myself even said last night on TV, I go, man, the highlights of the last 3 years with Deshaun Watson have been when he's been on TikTok and not on the football field. Those are the only good times we've had over
the last
3 years.
Second half against Baltimore.
Great. I held on to that. It was like Homer Simpson with the it's still good, it's still good. Like, that's what that was.
Beating up on the Arizona's, Tennessee's of the world.
Let me tell you this. The veterans have flown back to their hometowns. I would imagine they're in a somewhat of a rest period, probably getting ready to ramp up the work. Probably working out lightly and getting things going, maybe setting some surgeries up and things like that. They'll talk themselves into it, certainly. We'll find out what they do at quarterback, and then we'll start to build it. But if they go back to the building, OTAs, mini camp, camp, and you start to see some of the same stuff, you're going to lose guys. That's when you do lose teams. There's no more who they're playing for them. And I don't want to waste another year. So I hope that I can turn right back around and say this is all on Deshaun Watson. Because, damn it, you know, I got two quarterbacks, one that's went out and played well ever since he's got traded out of here, and I got another one who I don't think is ever really going to play in the NFL again. I don't think once this contract is done, I don't think anybody's going to sign him. I don't think that they want to answer the questions or deal with the hassle. I think he's done as a professional football player, at least as a professional quarterback of the NFL. But I got two guys there. Well, now I can't keep saying it's the quarterback's fault. Like, you got to make your adjustments. You're going to get somebody new. You're probably going to get a veteran. Then you're going to get you're going to get a pop somewhere, and you're going to have to make your adjustments. And then, you know, let's think about the other fear that people do. What if they do squeeze the trigger on it? What if they meet with Deion and Shedeur Sanders? Think about this, folks. Don't get mad at me. I'm just asking. What if they do meet with Deion and Shedeur Sanders? And hey, you know what? We can do this. We can do this together. Are you going to criticize Shedeur Sanders? I believe Shedeur can take coaching. I believe that Shedeur and the people I do talk to that are around that program and have been around that program, and I'm telling you this, hand up, I'm not Ollie North over here. I'm telling you this, is that I believe he does crunch the film from what I'm told. He does study the tape. He does take the coaching, well, from his father, from the people that are in Colorado. I've never seen him, and no one else has ever seen him, be coached by anybody else. Is Kevin going to be able to give him the constructive criticism that is going to be needed? Will he do it with Cam Ward? Will he do it with any other quarterback? The question would be, hopefully, the answer would hopefully be yes. Shedeur does leave a certain discussion to be had. There's no denying that. So if they want to go and bring in Shedeur Sanders, all right. And I have defended Shedeur Sanders as a hard worker that's gotten better year after year. Now, there's things that he does that I don't like hold on to the ball forever. I don't like that. I don't like some of the times where he locks in on guys. I don't like that.
The amount of plays he just runs straight backwards.
But he's gotten better over these last 4 years. However, he's taken the criticism from his dad, from the other coaches with Colorado University and with Jackson State. Would he be able to take seriously what Kevin Stefanski says? Would Kevin be allowed to do that? Or would dear old dad start to stick his nose in if Shedeur goes out there and starts at week four for the Cleveland Browns and doesn't have the type of start that Deion thinks? I hope not. But these are questions we have to ask ourselves. We absolutely do.
It's a stain.
Because I'm telling you right now,
this year was absolutely a stain on Kevin Stefanski.
In December of next year, if they do take him and that starts to go out, we will point right back to this article. We'll go right back here. If you can't do it, if you can't criticize him, sorry. And you can be constructive. I'm not saying cuss him out in front of all the other veterans. No. You got to have some give and take, but there has to be some criticism.
We were on it very early on, and people thought it was a troll job when I brought up the game ball after he threw for like 170 yards in a game, and it seemed like they were going out of their way to coddle him, and the way they talked about him, they did not talk about him like a normal football player.
Oh.
And I've heard Andy Reid talk about Mahomes' weaknesses. I never heard the Browns once talk about a weakness.
Because they were comfortable too, because they knew he could take it.
Yeah,
they knew
of
he
course.
Could take it. And they know that they have a good relationship. And this is just, again, he went down there. He showed him his offense. Deshaun Watson wanted to be a part of that offense. And then we got this. So something's got to be on the coach as well.
Now the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima give their thoughts on what you might have missed about last night.
Just 4 days left until the national championship football game. One quarterback that will not be playing in that game. And will not be in college in general going forward. That would be one of our favorite names in the history of this show. Quinn
Ewers.
He's declared for the NFL draft. He announced on social media yesterday. 21-5 as a starter in Texas. Helped get the Longhorns to the Final Four, the college football semifinal. And towards the end, it would seem like all the Longhorn fans think they would have beaten Ohio State with a different quarterback.
Bad decision. Bad decision by Quinn Ewers. Tough kid. Tough enough kid. I think mentally resilient. Got benched in a situation in a big-time game. Was able to come back. Played decently well. 9,100 yards. I think he had through for 68 touchdown passes in his 3 years at Texas. But never healthy for an entire season. I don't think that this was the right decision. I think he should have went back to college for another year, got a little bit more season, and proved that he could stay healthy for an entire year. Of course, some of that stuff is obviously out of your control. No for the Cleveland Browns. No.
I remember that first social media post when he was
not that great either.
When he was a, I'll tell you.
He make all the throws?
He hits on the wheel route.
Ah.
Two wheel routes he hit on in that to save Texas, really. Those were nice throws and huge clutch throws for them. But overall, you're right. He's got deficiencies. Seemed to not really have a good feel of the pocket, where he'd stay in the pocket. He wouldn't abandon the pocket, so that's good. But he'd stay there and just get swallowed up. It was the oddest thing in the world. Like, he could not feel the pressure coming and would just kind of calmly go down instead of, you know, some guys are erratic and they run the hell out of there the first chance they get, and that's not good either. I remember that first social media post when he was a junior in high school and he had committed or looked like he was going to commit to Ohio State, and it was at one of those camps and he was doing all the Mahomes stuff. He was doing all the different angles, and it wasn't just like, hey, I'm going to do a sidearm throw here. He was throwing rockets. It seems like he didn't develop really since then. It seemed like you even added, he didn't have much of an arm.
No. And
when I saw that guy the first time, I'm like, holy cow, this guy's going to be amazing.
The awareness is a problem, as we said, and just let somebody else try him out.
What a story,
pass.
Too, by the way. He goes to Ohio State because he can't make NIL at that time in Texas. So he goes to Ohio State, and everybody knew everybody was on the same page. Maybe not at first, where fans were like, oh, that'll be our quarterback at some point. The people that were there all along were like, no, he's just kind of using the system. Ohio State's using him just to show, hey, we're getting the best of the best. And apparently they weren't even really developing him. They weren't really doing anything with him. And Quinn Ewers just got to hang out at Ohio State for a year. And then he got his NIL money. Were you buying that he is passing up like $6 million to stay in college?
I think he's passing up more money that he could have made to stay
in
college.
That's the interesting part.
I don't know how much, but...
So why would a guy who I'm sure is not being told by the pundits, like,
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Anybody saying he's going to be top three?
No.
QB? No. And yet, if he really had $6 million waiting for him, isn't that the poster child for somebody who should come back?
Yes. But of course, these numbers, Carson Beck originally was 4. Then it was 3. Now the people are like, maybe 2. So we don't really know. Like, they kind of throw around different numbers here.
All right, Ryan Day getting ready for Notre Dame. Now, remember, they played at the start of last year, and that was one of those physical, rugged games. And we know what happened at the end. Marcus Freeman looking a little green. His defense didn't have enough guys on the football field. Ohio State wins that game. And then there's a war of words between him and Lou Holtz. Well, Ryan Day does say this is a different Fighting Irish team this time around.
They're different than they were last year, but still very similar. So this game will be the third time we play them in 3 years. You know, the majority of our guys and certainly the older guys have played these guys before. So they know what a great team this is, and they know, you know, how good they are. I think that's good for our guys to understand who they're playing against.
So I told you earlier in the week, the one thing I'm nervous about is this is a physical Notre Dame team. They showed off that physicality. You know, and them coming back from that Northern Illinois humiliating loss, you know, they've become a different team. It's now you have a chance to. You didn't necessarily have a chance to do that under the old format. In most seasons, Notre Dame would have just been eliminated, just like Ohio State would have been eliminated with the loss to Michigan. So things have changed. They've become a different team. But I do think in watching them, yeah, that offensive line stuff is going to be a little nerve-wracking for Fighting Irish fans. I do think they got a chance, you know, between Riley Leonard and Will Howard. Like, I think Will Howard is better, but Riley Leonard can have a really good game. And on third downs, that dude knows where the first down marker is.
I just don't think he can push the ball down the field as well as Will Howard. Now, I know Will Howard's not necessarily just rifling it out throughout everywhere, but I think that Will Howard can push the ball downfield better than him. That's where I give the Buckeyes the edge.
Speaking of Howard, mixed reactions on the Buckeyes getting to the title game.
I do have to kind of pinch myself at times and be like, man, yeah, I'm in the national championship. But at the same time, it is where we expected to be, man. We got ready for this season saying that, you know, if we were going to come out of it saying it was a success, we were going to have to play 16, 17 games. And here we are, man. And so I'm just proud of our guys that we got to this point. But, man, the job's not finished, and it's not finished until we win.
Talking about a guy that has certainly helped out his draft stock throughout the playoffs, Will Howard, that guy is emotional. You see him firing guys up. It's been fun to see, you know, during the playoff run. One final note, Kenny. Cuyahoga Falls mayor announcing a temporary renaming of Notre Dame Avenue ahead of the national championship between Ohio State and the Fighting Irish.
Name again, like Don Waters? Walters? I follow him on Facebook. I know that.
It is. It's Mayor Don Walters announcing Wednesday that the road between Bailey Road and Charles Street will temporarily be renamed Buckeye Avenue from Friday. If Ohio State wins, does it have to stay that way?
Yeah. Yeah, let's mess up the entire postal system for it.
Yes.
They got a nice downtown, by the way, down there. And right along the river down there in Cuyahoga Falls. Unpaid testimonial. They got one of them places where the drinks smoke. It's wonderful.
Oregon, Ohio did that when they played Oregon in 2014.
Did they really?
They did not stay Buckeye, Ohio, or Ohio State, Ohio, or whatever they switch to for the
day. I mean,
now,
what's a name? It seems like if you win an election, you can just start willy-nilly changing names.
If Ohio State wins the game, they got to change it in France.
You know what?
That's Woody's Cathedral.
That's the thing. If you go and beat those Catholics.
Even the whole country?
Arch-Schleister Cathedral.
they got the Catholic Church. They got the Vatican. We got the mega church down in Columbus.
Yes, we certainly do. Is that Rod Parsley? Isn't that what his name is? Entertaining fella. Yeah. Don't act like I haven't watched one of his specials. That coming up at 7 right now. We got to go to the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We welcome in Jason Lloyd from The Athletic, where he wrote an article that was Nancy Grace, Billy Jack Haynes, bombshells combined over Deshaun Watson and the Cleveland Browns. And he joins us right now. Good morning to you, Jason Lloyd.
Good morning, Ken Carmen.
Well, you sound like a beaut. Has Kevin Stefanski, this is my main question here, because I think it's over with Deshaun Watson, all that's left of the lawyers, right? Yep. My question is with Kevin, is the relationship with Kevin Stefanski and his players rocky now? Is it beyond repair? Because this, to me, the way I'm reading it here, like there's a losing of trust over this period.
I think it was frustration more than anything. That's the impression that I got. from talking to players, and obviously you're referring to the piece about he wouldn't call out Deshaun in film sessions. I'm taking it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that occurred this year, and I can't give you a reason why. You know, I don't know if it was that they were trying to prop him up a little bit because it was so bad and there were so many mistakes. I mean, if you called out every mistake, you'd be there all day. We all saw the games. We all saw how bad it was. So I mean, the Browns may push back and say that didn't happen, but that he called him out. But I mean, when I'm talking to guys in cleats and pads who, and it wasn't just one, who say that they're sitting there as a team and we all see it on the board and everybody sees the mistake. Everybody sees what's happening, what's going on. And there's no correction there in front of the team. I just think it was more frustrating. I don't think he's lost the team at all. I don't think that at all. I think, but I do think that guys were just like, what are we doing? We all see it there. Why can't we talk about it?
Jason, when did the coaching staff, when did the organization kind of know that this was not going to get turned around?
I think over the summer they knew.
Over the summer?
I think they knew in training camp. Yeah, I think they knew then. That this was not headed in a good direction. And, I mean, Zach Jackson kept saying it. Zach kept saying, guys, something's wrong here. This looks really bad. All of this looks really bad. And, I mean, Zach was at every single practice. And then, you know, I've talked to people since. I wasn't at every practice, but I've talked to players. At the time, there was a sense of this isn't going great. And then in talking to players throughout the course, I didn't put this in, but over the course of the season, I was talking to a couple of players who said, oh, we knew going into Dallas, this was going to be rough. Like nothing in that opener against Dallas, nothing surprised us. Like we knew that was not going to go well. And I just think all the changes they made, none of them took. And none of them took in part because I don't know if it was mentally that he was done. I don't know if it was the shoulder. Like, we didn't spend a lot of time talking about the fact that no one had ever come back. Like, this was such a rare injury among quarterbacks that there wasn't just a long track record of how do you respond from this. So I think whatever the reason was, I think internally they knew over the summer they were in for a rough season.
Was there a possibility, Jason Lloyd joining us from The Athletic, was there any possibility that everybody knew that this wasn't going to work? And it's like, well, you know what? We've paid our money. He's going to start. And we're going to see whether or not this thing sinks or swims. Because remember, 2021, Baker breaks his shoulder. All right. He wants to make his money. Go right on ahead and start. Do you think that they came to a conclusion going, no matter what, you guys are safe. Let's just see how this one works out. Because they were steadfast. This front office is staying. The head coach is staying. And damn it, it went the whole way, Jason, that he was staying. They were there.
I think they kept playing him because they were trying to get something out of the contract. The difference between the Baker situation and the Deshaun situation was Baker had not been paid. And they were trying to figure out if he was worth paying. And it wasn't all just on-field football that they were looking at. It was the whole package with Baker, and they kept playing him. And like Kevin gets killed for that. And I think it was that decision was made above him that they were going to keep playing Baker because they had a decision to make on that contract and whether or not they should extend him or not. And with Deshaun, the check was in the mail already, and they were trying to squeeze some sort of return out of their investment. And it became evident very, very, very early he was no longer an NFL quarterback. But when you've committed the type of money that you did to him, you got to try and get something out of it. And I think that's why they kept playing him. Had he not torn his Achilles, they probably would have continued to play him.
What? When is Kevin ever going to have the full amount of power that fans believe a head coach should have? Because you go
I
back
think right now.
Right go now. Ahead. So it took 5 years to get to year six, and now he has that amount of power.
Well, I mean, the Tommy Reese thing obviously is all him. They're going back to his offense. The offensive line coach is off the Callahan tree, if you want to call it that. Like, you know, he's going back to running this thing how he wants to do it. I would imagine, I don't know this 100%, I would imagine he's going to have a lot of input on who the next quarterback is. I would say this would be the first opportunity he has since he's been here to actually choose his own quarterback. So he walked into with Baker, and then obviously this Deshaun thing. So now it's on him now. Like, you know, I think this is his opportunity.
Well, I'm glad 5 years into this thing, it's finally on the head coach.
But we're talking strictly quarterback.
Oh, okay.
We're talking about quarterback. You know what I mean? Like,
year where there's no great ones coming out of the draft.
I know. Yeah, but. And that's why I said before, I don't know necessarily that this quarterback riddle gets solved this year, long term, because of what you just said, because it doesn't look like a great quarterback draft. Now, even in years where it doesn't look like a great quarterback draft, there's almost always at least one. Even the year of the Kenny Pickett, when a quarterback didn't go till 22. Well, Brock Purdy was in that draft too. And yeah, that was a lottery ticket, and the Niners got lucky, but he was still there. And they still eventually found him. So there's usually at least one quarterback in every draft. And the Browns got to find him. But and Kevin's got to be held accountable for 3-14. But being held accountable doesn't always mean you got to fire the guy. It means you got to fix it. So this was not a good year for anybody. But in terms of strictly the quarterback position, this is the first time where he's going to have an opportunity, I think, to pick his guy.
Just as a quick aside, and I got other questions as we're talking to Jason Lloyd from The Athletic, had the big story that came out yesterday. You had mentioned Bill Callahan, the Bill Callahan tree. Well, they obviously had Bill Callahan, and in your story, you pointed out that Van Pelt getting the axe might have rubbed Callahan the wrong way and may have eventually led to him leaving the team. The Browns had to have known that was in the cards, right? They had to have fully thought that out when they decided to go in a different direction.
They were, at that point, they were doing whatever they could to put Deshaun in an offense he was comfortable in. And if the quarterback's most important position, whatever, period. It doesn't matter who else is happy, unhappy. You have to fix the quarterback before you worry about anything else. And so I think that they made the move from Alex to Ken just in an effort to try and fix the offense and put Deshaun in the system that he felt – like he could succeed in. And if it costs you an assistant coach, then so be it. You know, I think the firing of AVP, I think, sent the writing on the wall of where this was going and how this was happening. And, you know, I would back it up just a little bit to, you know, I had a quote in there about you got to bring Joe back, you got to bring Flacco back because somebody has to teach Sean the offense. You know, that was said to me toward the end of the season, toward the end of 23. And that was really the first moment where I kind of thought, like, okay, there's something more going on here. Like, what's going on? And that's when I, like, my radar went up a little bit more because Deshaun didn't have a great year by any means, but he didn't have a terrible year. You know, when he first broke his shoulder against Baltimore, there was a depression among the fans of, oh no, they just lost their franchise quarterback. Now what are they going to do? Like, there was, you know, that people still thought the guy could play a little bit. And then to hear that, I thought, okay, there's more going on here. And so that's when sort of my antenna went up, and then they fire AVP coming off a moderately successful season where you won 11 games, went to the playoffs with five different quarterbacks. Like, that's kind of strange. And that's when I said, like, okay, you know, this is where this is going. And it's like some things started to click. And I think Bill Callahan looked at that and kind of had a feeling of, he saw the writing on the wall and saw where this was going. Because he, you know, according to the players that I talked to, they felt like he had made clear he wasn't going to join his son. And then when that happened, there was a pivot.
Well, that's not good. Jason Lloyd joining us here on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Now, Lyme and I have said over the last few years that, you know, people say, well, the owner, he led the charge. I'm like, no, from what we've been told. And will we ever get the absolute truth? I'm not sure. But from what Lyme and I have been told, it's like, well, they like Baker Mayfield a whole lot. They weren't necessarily the ones who led the charge. That might have been someone else in the front office. Is that, from what you know, true?
Yeah, so I was told by someone who would know that actually AB's year in Philly in 2019, AB was doing work on Deshaun in 2019, when that one year when he was a member of the Eagles staff. And now that was well before all of this. So, like, Andrew had always sort of liked Deshaun and liked him as a player. And then I believe there was a point in this where it became too much. Barry did not want to guarantee the whole contract, and the Browns said, and by the Browns, I mean the Haslams said, there's no stopping now. Like, we are in this. We go until the end. And so I do believe it started with Barry being first. I think there was a litany of reasons why they didn't want to invest in Baker. Some of them were on the field. Some of them were off the field.
Mm-hmm.
But they came to a decision as an organization that they could not trust him on the field or off the field. Baker, they didn't want to invest the type of money in him that it was going to take to land a franchise quarterback at that time in money and years. And at that moment happened to be a guy who looked like he was a significantly better quarterback at that time, who was an all-pro quarterback or a Pro Bowl quarterback, I mean, who looked like a top, whatever number you want to put that on, 5, 7, 10 in the league, whatever. I don't think anyone would dispute at the time, that Deshaun was a better NFL quarterback than Baker. And so they pushed all in and they went for it. And it blew up in their face. There's no question about it. But they weren't the only team that was interested in him. There was a lot of other teams that were interested in him. And there were four other finalists who were willing to give up exactly what the Browns did in draft compensation, and probably maybe not the entire guarantee of the money, but around the ballpark of the contract of the money. So they weren't the only ones in on this. They're just the only ones that had the grenade go off in their hand. But I just think that they, you know, the Haslams have tried for how many years to find a franchise quarterback, and they couldn't do it. And they looked at this as an opportunity. Guys of his caliber had become available in like 70 years, literally 70 years. I think Fran Tarkenton was the last one that a quarterback in the prime of his career with Pro Bowl appearances became available. And so they said, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to go get an established, talented, top quarterback in this league. We're just going to buy him. We're just going to do whatever it takes to go out there and buy him. And it blew up on him.
Jason, fantastic as always. Wish we had more time. You know we always do. We thank you very much for the time you were able to give us. Follow him on Twitter, @ByJasonLloyd. Jason, thank you.
See you guys.
Jason Lloyd from The Athletic on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hear that entire interview, 92.3thefan.com.